I'm gonna separate out the source sheets a little bit so that this one's not too congested. Right now, there's a lot going on in here, so I'm probably gonna pull out Rabbanan Lo Bina Tirusa. I'll probably pull out the Lefi Mamon Lefi Nefashos discussion, just that the Makoros sheet itself doesn't remain too unwieldy. Is that okay with you guys if I do that? I'll separate. Yeah, I'll explain to you how I'm just gonna probably cut it into three to make it more clearly about the different components of this sugya. So probably gonna separate out the general Melech Koach b'nei Yair for their not public goods, then separate out the representation question, the Rashei Ha'ir as the apotropsim of the b'nei, and then talk about the then have a separate sheet on Melech, and then Lefi Mamon Lefi Nefashos as a separate sheet, and then Rabbanan Lo Bina Tirusa as a separate sheet. Okay. So let's start with Rabbanan Lo Bina Tirusa. Very nice little sugya here. And since Rumi doesn't want us to go into it too deep now before the semester starts, before the next semester starts, I really just want to touch on some of the major themes, especially how they relate to the sugya we just covered. The Lefi Mamon, Lefi Nefashos, what's the basis of collecting a tax? What's the proper way to distribute it? So let's start with this sugya here. Eitan and Jesselson, do you want to get us started with this Gemara?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Rabbi Yehuda, Nisi Rama Deshura Rabbanan. So Marishal Gish
What did Rabbi Yehuda Nasi do?
Rabbanan
Did you get a chance to prepare this or not yet?
Latzrachin
Oh,
Yetirata.
okay. Yeah, that's fine. So we'll pick we'll call on someone else. Shmuel, did you get a chance to prepare this yet? No? Let's see. Daniel Zolti is a hand. Okay, quick volunteer. Zolti.
All right, we would Nasi would tax the Rabbanon.
For what? What's Deshura?
The wall.
Yeah, for building a wall, he would impose a tax on the Chachamim. Okay, or he would include the Chachamim in his tax. Great, go on.
So I'm Rishlagish, Rabbanon the Rabbanon don't need protections, therefore they shouldn't be taxed.
Yeah, so that's Reish Lakish's objection is that how could Abida Nasi have imposed this tax on the Chachamim? Chachamim don't need protection. Now, I just want to say from the get-go, there are really two things going on in the sugya here. What are those two things, Zolti? Or you could tell us one if you want. So the
Rabbanon lo sichani tirusa.
well, what's that being used for?
An exemption.
A tax exemption, right? So one thing is the exclusion or the exemption of Chachamim from paying taxes. That's a din. Then there's something else going on here, which is the justification, the rationale for that din. Rabbanan Lo Bina Tirusa. Now, on the rationale, I think this is one of the areas of halacha, arguably. To my mind, this is always a very fascinating question about when you see the legal aspects of halacha becoming entangled with some of the either the metaphysical or let's say some of the metaphysical aspects of halacha, right? So what or non-halachic metaphysical aspects of our worldview, right? So what's going how does that manifest itself here, Zolti?
I guess based on because the Rabbanan are kind of like they're just by learning or just by being Talmid Chachamim, they're going to have acquired some physical protection.
Right. So the thought, well, yeah, I would say, I don't know if it's physical protection or it's some metaphysical protection, right? So the
I'm
Gemara,
saying it's protection from physical things, in my
right.
sense.
Right. Protection from harms. But the protection here is, we'll see the Chazon Ish's formulation. It's not a rat. I mean, it's a type of nace. It's a type of reliance on hashgacha or super hashgacha for Talmid Chachamim. And it's not very often that we see the dine mamonis aspects of halacha being determined by the metaphysics of a Jewish worldview. Do you guys agree with that? Is that a, I know Shmuel and Josh, at least, should know one example of this, maybe like the discussions of the mazel of the socher or the mazel of the maskir. Does that ring familiar? Right, in some of those sugyas in Bava Metzia, The Gemara says, who pays damages? It depends whether it's mazal chagaram or mazal didei garam, right? Whose bad luck caused the accident? Josh, does that sound familiar to you? Yeah, Shmuel also, that rings familiar. So that's another area where it's a little striking to say that, oh, like we're looking at someone's mazal and that analysis of their mazal is going to determine their legal or financial liabilities. Arguably, this is another instance of that phenomenon, depending on how we interpret it. But at face value, at least, taking the Gemara Kipshuta, the reason why the Rabbanan are exempt from this financial responsibility that everybody else is obligated in is because of the metaphysical protection that they're afforded. Okay? Ariel, you have a hand on this?
No, I was just thinking, is there a rationalistic way of reading it without the metaphysical? But like, I think I saw that a little bit in the Mortified, but we'll come back to it later, I think.
Yeah, good. So we wanna as I said, at face value, at least, the Gemara seems to be saying this. And we always want to see if there's a different way of looking at it. I wasn't sure if you were raising your hand or you were just trying to do like a Jedi mind trick on the rest of us. So, Zecharia?
Yeah, I just want to note that this actually seems to be a machlokas. That in the first line you have Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did indeed impose the tax of the wall on the Rabbanan.
Excellent. Investigation. Yeah, and then also on Chesamid Aleph, we'll see over here of Nachman Barav Chizda Ramakargad Rabbanan. Yeah. So Rav Nachman Chizda did impose the tax, and then Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak gets upset at him.
Yeah.
So this is like our first Hezek Re'iyah question of what's the domain of discourse, or what is the logical space of halacha look like in terms of the range of views? And you're right. While our Gemara presents this clearly siding with the Rabbanan Lobay Netirusa camp, there is a view within the discussion that denies the rabbinic exemption.
Yeah, and I point out in the chat, I'm not sure if people got a chance to see, but
the stira
comes up twice in the sugya. Well, I don't know if it's a stira, it's at least, you know, it requires a chiluk.
Yeah.
That in this case,
it depends if we hold a bivalent logic, like from last shir, right?
That's right. But yeah, the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi seems to ascribe to some of the exemptions in the sugya, but not all of them.
Exactly. Okay. So that's something we want to look more deeply into. So right now, let's say we have a view. The Rabbanan are pater from taxes. An opposing view, seemingly endorsed by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in this case, that the Rabbanan are chayav in taxes. And then we have this, I would say, methodological / meta halachic question of the legal exemption being grounded in some metaphysical commitment about the divine protection for Talmidei Chachamim. Yes? Okay. How many of you like the halachic being grounded in the metaphysical? Romy likes it? Or Romy has a question on it?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't like this particular example. It's hard to understand how that works. But just like conceptually, the idea that the metaphysics of halacha should influence halacha seems intuitive.
Yeah.
Even if in practice, I don't really understand that.
Yeah. In some cases, it seems intuitive. Here it might seem more intuitive than in the mazel cases of mazel didei or mazel didei garam, like a lightning strikes and destroys a rented car.
That's what I mean. I don't think the example itself needs to be, meaning examples are difficult, even this one, I think. But what would it mean for metaphysics of halacha to be disconnected from halacha?
Well, you might say that it's in the very nature of halacha itself not to be so mechanism. So while it's true that there are these metaphysical things going on, the system of dinim is a low plug and is supposed to stay out of those, you know, what happens meachorei hapargod, and those types of considerations. I mean, I would think that's my sense in a lot of cases. Right, it's like we say that their bonus shalom will punish people for, you know, doing wrong, but bezin shalmata is limited in engaging in those types of inquiries, and that's why they can only kill beidim and asra usually, right? Or you know, if there's alpishna edim in a lot of cases, okay, so that's the chibideish ma'im or chibidei adam might track some of those differences, right? Or you know, the gemara, the famous gemara in brachos about bahade kivshe drachmana lamalach. You know, this back and forth with I think it was Chizkiah and maybe Yirmiah. I think that's right. I have to double check the gemara about how Chizkiah didn't want to have children because he saw that he was going to have a grandchild who was a Rasha. And then Yirmiah tells him, you know, Bahadeh Kivshe Drachman Alamalach, you have a Chiyav of Puravu, regardless of like what divine knowledge you have of like producing Rasha as a descendant. And a lot of people take that to mean like the halachic obligation remains firm and independent of these kinds of metaphysical or secret divine insights that you might have. Again, our case is a little different, but I do think that there's a basis for that distinction. Yeah. Okay, so let's get deeper into our discussion here. So back to Daniel. What's the source for Rabbanan lo tzricha netirusa? So we have a nice drasha here. So what's the drasha that the Gemara gives?
Nechtiv Savrim Michol Yibun. So I'll count them, they'll be greater than the sand. Asavim Leman, Ilim lo tzedekim din fishim achla. Ashtar kul Yisrael ketiv b'hu, chol asher asfasayam. Tzedekim asem Michol Yibun, right? So tzedekim, are they actually greater than them? El hachik amar.
Yeah, so just the Gemara says, who's the subject of this pasuk, right? That they're greater than sand. The Gemara has some reason for thinking that it's the tzaddikim, right, Daniel?
Right.
Okay, so what does it then say? What's the significance of them being compared to sand? Or their deeds being more than sand?
Right. Magin al hayam, masayim shal tzadikim shehim merubim, alo kosher shemaginim al hayam, right? Just as the sand, which is less than the amount of masayim of tzadikim, protects the shore from the ocean. So too, the actions of tzadikim, which are of greater quantity, right? They too should protect them, I guess, from harm.
Yeah, so it's nice drasha. I guess. I don't know if I would have seen this as a winning argument as a basis to exempt the Rabbanan from taxes just from the drasha itself. But fine, we get the idea. The idea is that there's some protective measure that the Maseyem Shel Tzadikim protect them. And so the thought is that they don't require a physical choma for their protection. Yes, Daniel? Yeah. Okay. Let's get this next. That's one makor. Okay, that's Reish Lakish's drasha. Then we have Rabbi Yochanan adding to this discussion, right? What does he say?
Yatal commander Rabbi Yochanan, Amale, my tamar lo tema le miha, ani choma shte kimigdalos, ani choma zutaro shte kimigdalos,
vishadai kimigdalos.
Shadai kimigdalos, eletamichacham.
Yeah. So the Gemara ends up having another drasha. I think this is from Shira Shirim, where the Gemara says that Torah and Talmidei Chachamim function as a wall or like a tower, which also provides this type of protection. Right, Daniel? So again, another metaphor in the Psukim that it's actually not clear, and this is something we'll see in the Mefarshim, whether the thought here is that Talmidei Chachamim protect themselves or that they protect others as well. Because like Shaddai Kimigdalos is supposed to be, I guess, like something that provides, or Kichoma provides protection for the entire town. Right? So we'll see some discussion of this in the postgame. Like the idea is that it's not just that they themselves don't require protection, but their contribution provides protection for everyone. Something like that. So it's just be open to that distinction. So fine, we have two nice drashas in the Gemara. Then we have Rav Nachman and the two Rav Nachmans in disagreement. So I want to take a careful look at this. So Daniel, take us to this part of the Gemara, Daf Chesam and Aleph.
Rav Nachman bar Chista, Rama Kar.
That's right, by the way, I said Chesam and Aleph.
Okay, so.
Yeah, it's exciting that we just got into Daf Ches. That's all. Go ahead, Daniel.
Rav Nachman Baruch Hista Rama Karaga Rabbanan, that he would raise taxes on the Rabbanan.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion what exactly a karga is, but it's a certain type of tax, and he imposed it on the Rabbanan. So here, just touching, returning to Zachariah's point, you see another instance where an important figure taxes the Chachamim. Go on, Zolti.
Right, so you guys were over on something that was written on the Torah, something that's written in the Neviim, something that's written in the Ketuvim.
So this was a touchy topic, as you can tell, right? Generated a lot of resistance when he imposes tax on the Chachamim. Now let's look at these psukim. So how, in what sense was he over on the Doraisa, the Nevi, and the Ksuvim? So let's see, Adoraisa Dechsev.
Doraisa Dechsev, Av Chovav Amim, Kol
Kishav. Av Chovav Amim.
Av Chovav Amim, Kol
Kishav. Isn't this Vezosa Bracha? No? Yeah. Any Bali Kriya here? Av Chovav Amim, Kol Kishav, Yadav Chovim. Okay, go on. So what does that mean?
Even in a time when let's say other nations are kind of like ruling, right?
Because even when Hashem is favoring the other nations,
right?
Nevertheless,
your holy ones are still in your hand.
Exactly. So Kol Kadoshev Shei Yisrael Heim Biyadecha Biyadecha Heim L'Shomram, Rashi says, meaning the Talmid Chachamim, the Kadoshim, are going to be protected by Hashem even when he's causing trouble for the rest of Bnei Yisrael. That's the Gemara's presentation, at least. So that also seems to suggest they don't require the Shmira. And then the Gemara goes on darshaning the pasuk, Heim Tikul Raglecha.
Heim Tikul Raglecha. Tani Rabbi Yosef Elu Talmid Chachamim.
And Yisa Midabro Secha, which is the end of that pasuk.
Yisa Midabrotecha, Lisav Litem, Vidibrotav, Shel Makom.
Yeah, now let me just say, it's not clear to me if this part of the drasha, Vehem Tu Kula Reglecha, Yisa Midabro Secha, is part of the justification or part of the rationale for why they don't require Shmira. Or is it just a separate part of the pasuk to show that the pasuk is referring to Talmidei Chachamim, right? Kol Kadosha Biyadecha Vehem Tu Kula Raglecha Yisa Midabro Secha. So is the fact that they travel around teaching Torah or engaging in this Lisa Velitim B'Dibros Shel Makom, is that related to their exemption from taxes and being an Hashem? So I just want to flag that right now, and we're going to come back to that later on. Or is it just a separate drasha to show that the pasuk refers to Bnei Chachamim? Everybody see that? Okay. Now, that's why your overall divrei Torah. Af chovev amim kol kedosha biyadecha. The kedoshim remain in Hashem's hands, or Rashi says, for protection. So I guess that's the key presumption here of the limud. But now let's look at the Nevi and the Ksuvi. Adinavi, how did he violate the Nevi'im?
Adinavi, dechtiv, gam ki nu begoyim ata kapsim v'yachlu mi'ad mi'masa melech v'sarim. Amar ula, pasuk zeh v'lashin aramis nemar. Itinu kulu ata kapsim v'yachlu mi'ad v'yachlu mi'masa melech v'sarim.
So what does that pasuk mean? Anybody know what's going on there? Zolti, do you know what's going on there?
Not 100% sure.
Tell us what you're 50% sure of.
So, if you're to give other nations...
So this is talking about when you're stranded amongst the Goyim, always look up the Psukim. It's always very interesting to see where the Gemara gets this from. Even when you're stranded amongst the nations... Yeah, Rashi explains this. If everybody engages in mitzvos or Torah learning, right, then ata kabtzim, right, I'll gather everybody out of the exile. V'im ma'at mehem, and if only some of them, yichalu mimasa melech v'sarim. So what does that mean? even if a few of them are engaged in Torah learning, they will be exempt. They will get an exception for mi masa melech v'sarim. What's masa melech v'sarim?
Tax of the melech v'sarim.
Exactly. The burden of kings, which is having to pay for taxes, right? So even when you're stranded amongst the Gentiles, the nations, if some of you are engaged in Torah, if everyone's engaged in Torah study, the Gemara says, then everyone will be redeemed. But even if it's only a few, a subset, then they're going to be exempt from Masa Melech V'sarim. They're not going to be burdened, or they ought not be burdened with tax responsibilities. Now, what do you guys make of that pasuk? What's going on in that pasuk? How does that like follow? Anybody want to take a stab at that? What seems to be the idea here, Romy?
I mean, it seems like it's just a schar. Like there's no like logical tour that relates to really anyone else. It's just that there's some kind of schar for.
Possibly. But what does the first half of the pasuk have to do with the second half, right? So if everyone is engaged, then we're going to be redeemed. But if from being stranded amongst the Gentiles, but if only a few are, then at a minimum, they'll be exempt from taxes. What's the connection between those two components?
I don't really think you're going to like this. To me, it seems like it's like, okay, if Hashem is going to bring the geula if everybody learns, so if some people are learning, then they're going to be, you know, beyond the, like the constraints of like standard society and like reality. Like they'll already be kind of in a sense moving towards that geula or being experienced some kind of quasi that by not being responsible to the normal constraints that people experience.
Yeah, are you going in a little too strong for me right now? But I would say, tell me if this is too weak for you, Romy. I mean, it seems like Hashem's saying there would be a redemption if everybody were to be on board with this, you know, Torah study project. But if some people are, they shouldn't be held back by the people who aren't. So it's like the reason why you're in exile still, and therefore requiring this type of protection, is because of the fact that not everybody is engaged in the project of Talmud Torah. So the people who are engaged in it shouldn't be penalized by having to support the Masa Melech V'Sarim, like the costs of having to protect ourselves in exile. Rumi, is that a more parv way of getting at your idea? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's kind of, it's interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Good, or?
I think it's weird. Like, it's a little weird to say that, like, you're saying because if not for everybody else, we, you know, they wouldn't be there and wouldn't have to pay for it.
Right, well, isn't that the pasuk? So it's gam ki itnu bagoyim ata kabzim. So imtanu kulhu, if everybody is studying, then I'll gather them all now. But if only a miut are, let's at least exempt them from masa melech v'sarim. And I'm saying, what's the connection between those two things? Right, it seems to be saying that the cost of not everybody engaging in tanu kulhu shouldn't be imposed on the people who are engaging.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on that derivation from the pasuk? Zecharia, did you get a chance to look at the pasuk?
Yeah, when I looked it up, that the yichalu was like literally the opposite of what the Gemara is reading it. Like the Gemara's reading it as like a mechila. And the pasuk, okay, it's like, no, okay, You'll be weakened by this. Like literally the opposite. It's like you'll be harmed.
Yeah. But in the Gemara's pasuk, in the Gemara's darshaning of it, what's the opposition between these two? Like what's the relationship between these two parts of the pasuk? The Gemara learns about Yichalu as you will have waived, or you'll be waived from, you'll be exempted from, Rashi says from Lo Yachel Devaro, as the meaning of the word. Okay, that's at least my suggestion for how it fits into context there. Yeah. Just, I think, just look at Rashi. V'chein ruban yu shonim v'oskim b'torah k'she yigalu ba'amim k'she yiglu ba'amim. If most people, kulam or rubam, are engaged in Torah when they're spread in the diaspora, ata kabzeim, b'karav kabzeim. So it'll be a near redemption. But if it's just mu'atim, hein hashonim ba'amim, yichalu mimasa melech v'sarim, yu b'telim milaseis masa. Masa melech v'sarim. They'll at least be exempt from having to engage in this burden. And my suggestion is that the burden is caused by remaining in the exile. Okay? Okay, let's go on to the Adichsuvi. Zolti, take us to the Adichsuvi. Let me just say one more thing about that. Notice how that might bring us closer to the Mordechai's rationale of taxation. So the Mordechai's theory for Lefi Nefashos, Lefi Mamon was that, remember the Gova Batim, that the person who's Gorim HaNezek pays more. So you might say that's implicit in this source, right? At least in my reading of this source. Since it's not the Talmid HaChamim who are responsible, they're not Gorim the Nezek of requiring the protection, rather it's the people who are not shown in Voskim B'Torah. That's a reason why they shouldn't have to bear in the burden. Okay, so just file that in the back of your mind about the connection to the Mordechai's rationale for tax collecting. That's slightly different, I think, from the standard view you get from Rabbanan Lobai Netirusa. In the standard view of Rabbanan Lobai Netirusa, what seems to be the reason why the Rabbanan are exempt? What would be the basis for tax collection on the straightforward reading of the Gemara's proposition? Josh Brofman?
I missed that. Can you repeat it?
Yeah. What would be the standard reason for thinking that the Rabbanan don't have to pay taxes? Rabbanan Lobai Netirusa, because they have protection. What would that seem to presuppose about the reason for collecting taxes in the first place?
I mean, it assumes that the justification for the taxes was to protect people.
Yeah. And what type of basis is that?
What type of basis is that? Hana?
Yes. Right. I think Hana. Right, you're paying for the Hana protection. Rabbanan Lobai Netirusa, they don't need the protection, and so they're exempt. That's different from saying that, there are people out there who are responsible for creating the costs, right, or Gorem the Hezek, not sure, in the Mordechai sense, the Yadarma sense, and therefore the Chum are not participants in creating that cost, so they shouldn't have to share in the burden. So we see the difference between those ways of thinking about it right now. Okay, so I just want to bring that to the foreground. Now, Adichsuvi, Zolti, back to you. So remember, we're criticizing Rav Nachman for imposing this tax on the Chachamim. We said he violated Torah, Nevi'im, and also Ksavim. So Zolti, what do you have?
Adichsuvi, Dichtiv, Manda Belo, V'halach Lo Shalit L'Mirma Aleihem.
Yeah. So tell us what's going on in Ezra Zion. Since your Harusa is our resident Tanakh expert, I hope he made you look up the Psukim when you were working through the Sugya.
He zipped through it a little too fast for me, so
Okay, so what's going on here in Ezra Zion? It's not fair to Josh because he's our Hebrew Tanakh expert. It's not clear that he's our Aramaic Tanakh expert also. So what's going on in Ezra 7? Anybody?
It's a letter from Daryavesh to pretty much the officers in charge of Israel saying, here's the taxes you should collect and not collect and what you should do.
Just when they come back to Eretz Israel to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Yeah.
And what does he say? So he says, you should all be aware, right? You're on notice that what? The kol kohanaya vileveye zamaraya saraaya nesinaya upolche beis elah dina minda velova halach lo shalif lemir me'aleihom. So what does that mean in accessible language? the taxes, right? So the minda below alach are three types of taxes, should not be imposed on the Kohanim, the Levim, the singers, the helpers, right? Or anybody involved in the worship of the Beis HaMikdash. So literally a tax exemption for people who contributed to the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Ah, here we go. Ariel gave us the translation. Which translation is this, Ariel?
It's the Safari JPS.
Okay. It's not permissible to impose tribute, poll tax, or land tax on any priest, Levite, singer, gatekeeper, temple servant, or other servant of this house of God. Okay?
Is this a different reasoning than we've seen so far, though?
Oh, excellent. So let's see. First, let's see what the reasoning is. Okay? So what does Tosfos say explaining our Gemara? Lo shalat l'mirma aleihan. Ariel, you want to just read that for us?
Sure. Lefi shayu oskim melechat shamayim v'binyan beit hamikdash. Hani hachanami in lahatil mas al lomdei Torah. So the same way that people are working in binyan beit hamikdash, you're not going to charge people who are lomdei Torah. I guess he's lumping them in the same category.
Yeah. So first of all, Tosus is pointing out there's an interesting extension from the officers and workers of the Beis HaMikdash to Tamid HaChamim, right? That's it's an extension. But Ariel, tell us a little more about what you were saying about whether this implicates a different rationale for the Tamid HaChamim's exemption. What did you mean by that?
So, I mean, I guess the whole idea before was like a metaphysical that if you're involved in Torah study, that will protect you from needing, or it would be something in place of needing protection. And if the whole call was also Lomdei Torah, then that would exist for them as well. Whereas I think here, this is that like you're working on behalf of the Beit HaMikdash, you're working on, it's like an exemption because you're already working for part of the community, that you get like some sort of parsonage type of situation.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. When you read this pasuk in Ezra, the sense that you get is this was a benefit to the Kohanim Levi and people involved in Beis HaMikdash because they're providing a public service. Like today, in the same way that nonprofits have certain special tax benefits on the theory that they're contributing to society. The thought here seems to be that people involved in the holy work of the Beis HaMikdash, they contribute to society in one way. And we're not going to make them double contribute through also requiring them to pay taxes. Does everybody agree with Ariel's? I guess there's not much in the psukim to reinforce Ariel's reading, but I guess intuitively, right? It makes sense. What's special about the, you don't get the sense that, oh, the pasuk is assuming some divine protection for them. As Tosa says, it's the fact that they're oskim of lecha shemayim. It's appropriate to not tax them. It's not based on a theory of low bite in Itirusa. Yeah? So I think that's right. Now, if that's true, that brings us already to a third distinct type of rationale for why the Tamid HaChachamim should be exempt from taxes. And notice, maybe it's not even limited to Tamid HaChachamim, right? I don't know if these Zamarayas and Sarayas and Nisinayas were scholars per se. No, like it's literally just the fact that they're oskim b'melacha shemayim. Correct? So number one, so we have three different theories on the table so far. Number one, the phrase Tamid HaChamim lo tzrichin netirusa, which the Gemara opens with, sounds like they don't require protection. Ani chom v'shadai k'migdalo, so all those derivations, k'chol al hayam, imply that Chachamim don't benefit from the security, which seems to presuppose a Hana-based rationale for tax collecting in the first place. My reading of the Nevi'i example, and we'll see this will have support in the story that the Gemara brings later on with the Keser of the Melech, implicates a different rationale, a rationale that taxes are for the are costs imposed on the person who brings the Nezek, who creates the costs. The thought here, Tamid HaChamim don't create the cost of protection, right? Because I guess if everybody were to be studying, we'd be redeemed already and wouldn't have to pay all these foreign taxes. And number three, what Ariel's saying now, based off the Ksuvi example in Ezra, that if someone's involved in a public service or providing a public benefit, at least melacha shemayim, that's a reason to not hold them accountable to provide public goods separately through financial contributions. Does everybody see that? You might say, you could even say they're already giving their labor, right? So we're not going to make them give their labor plus an additional tax. So let's take some hands on this. Let me just say, yeah, it's fine. I'll reinforce the second theory a little bit later on. So let's see. We have Josh Brofman. Who else had a hand? Then Romy and somebody else had it. And then Ariel.
I'm just wondering, like, if we know, like, the history of this time, were the Talmidei Chachamim, like, paid, like, by the community? Like, was it kind of like a, do we know? Like, how did they get their money?
Good. We're going to have to look into that when we get into this more deeply. We'll see which Talmidei Chachamim, and does it assume they're not making an income?
Okay, no, because I was also thinking, if the community is the one, like, setting up the fund to make sure these people learn, then it makes sense they don't, like, pay the money back to the community, like, right? Like,
Yeah, that's interesting. We're going to see a Chaznish who says something along, though a little different from what you're saying, but related to this question of what their income is expected to be and where it's coming from. So, yeah, good point. Romy?
Yeah, I just wondered if the categorization based on the Pasuk in Ezra should be a little bit sharper, because if it was like Tosos could have said, "Vishayu oskim b'tzarfei tzibur," or something like that, or similarly, right? If that were the idea, then anyone involved in different kinds of tzarchei tzibur should also be pater, right?
Yeah. Interesting. So you're distinguishing between tzarchei tzibur and melacha shemayim?
Yeah, right. Meaning this seems to be much more, like, I mean, it seems to be very specific. Like, you know, doctors or whatever, let's say, could also argue, like, I'm providing public good. Although, right, I think that also you have to relate to Josh's point about payment and things like that, or what you're already being paid for or what you're not. But anyway, yeah. I just think that's worth raising.
Yes, meaning what is the salient feature of Melecha Shemayim that Tosis is leaning on? Agreed. Yeah, so you want to look at that. And is it Melecha Shemayim as a type of Tzarchei Tzibur, or only Tzarchei Tzibur that are a type of Melecha Shemayim? I think we want to visit that more carefully as we get into this. But I do, I think, but you agree with Ariel, as I do, that this seems to be a different type of rationale. Right? Unless you would say the significance of Tzarchei Shemayim is that it creates protection, but you don't get that. I don't get that sense from this pasuk or from the Gemara. Okay. Ariel?
I mean, you could skip this question if it's not like fit, but I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between one and two. Besides, I guess in the same way we looked at the difference between atavat hachatzer versus like losing usage of their chatzer, like it's two sides of the same coin of whether or not you say the wall is considered hana or tzorech. Do we have another place where it says whether a wall is necessary or if it's a hana situation?
So just phrase the beginning, just restate the beginning of the question for me. What's about teasing out the
difference? Yeah, so I think between... in Hezekiah, there were two different ways of looking at the purpose of the law.
Or a benefit.
Yeah.
But here, how does that relate to this discussion?
Because I feel like one is saying that, yeah, it's a benefit to have a wall because you have security. And number two is saying you need security, but the Rabbanan don't need security, so they're exempt. Is there another place where we say whether or not the wall is for the purpose of like
security? I don't see this as a dispute about the nature of the wall protection. I see this more as what's the basis for imposing a tax? Are we imposing a tax because people are benefiting from the protection? Like almost as a yored type consideration. Well, that would be the hana based theory. Mm-hmm. And then the Rabbanan don't benefit, so they don't pay. The second theory is there are certain segments of society that are causing us to require this type of protection, or that are the cause of us having to pay taxes. And maybe those two different formulations are the difference between the Yad Ramaz formulation about Gorim Hakefa Yaseira versus the Mordechai's like Gorim Ayin and Gorim Hanezek. And there the theory is that it's like, look, if you have half of society smokes and they cause the rest of society's medical care to go up because they're inhaling the second hand smoke, it makes sense to impose the costs, those extra medical costs on the smokers. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's how I was reading the Ksuvim, the Nevi'im example. Like, if you think that we're in exile and we have to pay for these security costs because a certain segment of society, then that segment of society should bear the cost of it. Mm-hmm. Right. The people who aren't smoking shouldn't have to bear the medical costs of the secondhand smoke, which is harm caused by the smokers.
Okay, that's a lot clearer. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I'm thinking of the second theory. And that's distinct from the third theory, which is just that, there should be a tax benefit to people who generally contribute to Melachas Shemayim, Tzarchei Tzibur, depending on the different formulations Romy is suggesting. Is everybody clear on those three different different formulations? Yeah? Okay. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Anybody want to speak now? Those are all good? Benji Katz, good? Excellent. Okay, so let's look at the Gemara in Chesamet Aleph. Where is Daniel, our Gemara man?
Your Papa Rama Krei Chalat Ayatme. So your Papa would put a tax on the Yatomim for the irrigation system?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question about the Yesomim issue. I want to hold off on the Yesomim for now because I don't want to complicate our Yesomim discussion together with our Rabbanan discussion. But there is something very important about the presumptions the Gemara assumes apply to not taxing Yesomim, because they're labanei mechila, and that assumes they have to be getting some direct service for the taxes they're paying. Did anybody catch that in the Gemara? Because the Gemara says we can only impose a tax for the well, you know, let's say a well exploring whether there are wells, if in fact we end up providing water to those Yisomim. Right? And that's very fascinating, because the Gemara seems to be saying that the tax is not justified for Yisomim unless they get a concrete benefit from it. But like what, for everybody else, it is justified? So it sounds almost there are two dinim here in the taxation. One standard applies to Yisom and one standard for everybody else. Nafkamina, whether it has to materialize with concrete services. And the Gemara seems to think that B'nai Mechila is relevant to this. We had already seen B'nai Mechila in the Pshara discussion in Bav Metzia, with that famous Rashi about the Yisomim, that the animal whose teeth, who had no teeth and then died. And Rashi spoke about whether Pshara is relevant for Yisomim, because it's Labanei Mechila Ninu. If you don't remember that, make sure you do good Chazara over winter break. So this is a fascinating side discussion here, which we're going to come back to. And then the Gemara comes back to Rabbanan. So I'm Rav Yehuda. Sorry about that. I'm Rav Yehuda.
I call it Agle Gapa. Afilu Miyatme of Rabban Lo Sichonet Shurta. Right, so when it comes to the gates of the city, so then even the Yatomim have to pay for it, but the Rabbanan don't, because they don't need to.
Good. So something about reinforcing the gates of the city or the security of the city, Yisomim have to pay, but not the Rabbanan. Again, we get this rationale of Rabbanan lot tzvichin et tirusa. But then the Gemara gives a different type of tax. Hakol
akayapatya filerim Rabbanan. For the irrigation system, even the Rabbanan have to pay.
Yeah. So I wonder, by the way, how this relates to the pasuk in Ezra. So let's go back to the pasuk in Ezra. So why did the Rabbanan have to pay for the irrigation system or the sewage system? Daniel?
Why did he have to pay for it?
Why did the Rabbanan have to chip in for the irrigation system?
Because they derive benefit from it.
Exactly. They appear to derive benefit from it. Rashi's Lasos Ber Mayim. As the Ritva here says, why do they have to go? De inhunami tzrichimaya. Right? They also require water. So therefore they have to chip in. So the question is, by the way, if you take the Pasuk and Ezra rationale that Ariel gave us, that if you're Osik and Malachas Shemayim, you shouldn't have to chip in for other public goods, is this an obvious conclusion? Right, Ariel?
No, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, so we want to figure out if we're going with the rationale that someone who's osik melech hashamayim should be get special exemptions elsewhere. Maybe they should get a special exemption on the water, on the irrigation system. Anybody agree with that? At least it's a suggestion. Yes. Now let's go back to Ariel's JPS translation. Is not permitted to impose a tribute, poll tax, or land tax. Those are the three things mentioned in that pasuk in Ezra. It's an interesting question whether those are all for security or also for public services that the Chachamim would be benefiting from. Right, Ariel? So if those are other public services as well, then they'll be in contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda's tax over here, where Rabbi Yehuda says, I call a chari pasya, afilim rabbanan. Okay, so go on, Ariel. Go on, Daniel. Then we have a distinction the Gemara draws. Yes, so what does that mean?
It's only with regard to when they're not required, like in the case of when they don't have to go ahead and start digging. However, in the case of when they'd actually be like part of like chipping in is to dig, then the Rabbanim are not including do not have to dig.
Right. So are we talking about manual labor contribution or just writing a check? If it's writing a check for the irrigation system, then the Chacham have to chip in for that. If we're talking about physical or manual labor contribution, then the Rabbanon are not obligated. Now, my question is, why should that matter? So, or to put it differently, is this an interesting halachic conclusion for our sugya or an uninteresting one?
It's an interesting one.
You think it's an interesting one?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. It might be very uninteresting if this is just a kavod issue, right? Because if you're saying, oh, it's not respectable for everyone to chip in manual labor, then it's not interesting for our sugya of taxes and the responsibility to the public. All it tells us is that that concern or that obligation can be defeated by kavod considerations. No? I mean, that's interesting if you're pursuing the question of kavod tamid chachamim, but it's not so interesting as a tax question. Correct? Zilti?
I guess, yeah.
I mean, you might find it interesting, but objectively, it's not interesting. I'm kidding. I don't know if objectively it's interesting or not, but you see how it's less exciting for our purposes if it's purely a kavod issue. Ariel, did you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was going to say if we want to bring it outside a kavod issue, you could say based on the pasuk in Ezra that it was like everybody has some sort of community service they need to pitch in, but if you're already doing so in one way, then you don't need to go help and dig because you've already fulfilled that requirement.
But it's a little strange, though, why they have to, if it's just a financial obligation, they have to chip in. But once it becomes a manual obligation, then suddenly we're exempting them. Meaning if the deliberation is purely from a communal responsibility question, not from a covet issue, it's a little strange that manual versus financial contribution should be decisive. No? Anybody?
One takes time out of the day and the other is just writing a check.
Oh, okay. It's interesting. Nozick, Robert Nozick argues in Anarchy, State, and Utopia that there's no difference between, which I mentioned this in the past, there's no difference between imposing a tax and manual labor, because if you have to pay money, you're going to have to work more to make back the money. But I don't know if that's a good argument. Look at the Rambam here in Shechinim Vavav, then I'll take Josh's hand. He says, oh, if the Talmid Chachamim, if people have to go out of physical labor, you know, like in those prisoners who are like chain gangs, is that what they're called? Right. So everyone gets in their orange jumpsuit and they get handcuffed by their legs and they go to dig the irrigation system. The chum don't have to go. Lo yitzu tamid chachamim she'ein darach tamid chacham lehizdalzel bif lifnei amar. So the Rambam here in Shechinim Bava makes it sound like a kavod issue. Interesting thing is, there's a machlokas we've shown him here. I just want to flag this. So let's say the chachamim are not obligated to go out in person. Do they have to at least write a check? Somebody see this? So the Ritva has 2 days about this. Yesha Pirshu, the Mikol Makom Nosnin Schar Liskar Polam Achirim Bimkomam. So everyone has to do manual labor, the Chamar Pater, but they got to pay for somebody to go out in their place. Which means that in principle, they're obligated to chip in. It's just a covet issue, and we can neutralize the covet issue by finding pinch hitters. A little hard to understand the Ritva's view unless it's just a formal, technical type of exception. No, one, he thinks once they're potter from manual labor, they're potter from even finding replacements. Does everybody see that back and forth? So it's a little hard to know what really motivates the Ritva's position, but something that we should give thought to. As we get deeper into this question. Okay, so that's the Yotzen Bachluza. So the question here again, Nafki Bachluza, the question here is again, why exactly the Tamid Chachamim Pater from going out in person? And the second question, given certain justifications for the rabbinic exemption in general, specifically the Ezra exemption, why are Tamid Chachamim Pater from Karya Pasya? Right. Why are they chayiv for digging the irrigation system? Right. Does that assume a benefit basis of taxation? Okay. Everybody with me? Yeah. Questions on this before we move on to the next part of the discussion in the Gemara? Okay. So I want to now just quickly. Let's see. Yeah, I want to quickly just discuss this last case and consider which type of justification it raises, and then make one comment in a Chazanish, who I think has a really insightful comment on our sugya. So Chesamad Aleph, Zolti, you've been doing an excellent job, so why don't you take us to the story of Rebbe?
Sure, I have not done this Gemara though. Well,
thank you. Okay. Zchari, you want to take over for Zolti?
Sure thing. So Rebbe Pasach Otros B'Shnei Betzora. So it was some sort of drought, and Rebbe had the storehouses of food, and he opened them up. Amar Yikansu Bali Mikra, Bali Mishnah, Bali Gemara, Bali Alacha, Bali Gada, Bal Ami Aretz Lo Yikansu. So he said, only those who have learned some area of Torah may come and collect food, and Ami Aretz, I guess, you know, just too bad.
Yeah, I just say, don't try this at home. No, it may not be good for public relations if you try that at home. But I guess, yeah, Rebbe, it's kind of very fascinating. It's like a fascinating position that Rebbe was taking, no?
Right. Also, like, was he acting as the Nasi here?
Yeah, right. This is, it's a curious position. It seems a little unnecessarily antagonistic, no?
Yeah.
But fine, right? That's the position. So if you're an Amaretz, it says don't come in, right? Then Dachak Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram v'nechnas.
All right, so this guy pushed his way in. Amalo Rebbe Parnasini. He says, Rebbe, feed me. Amalo Bini Karisa. Amalei Lav Shanisa. Amalei Lav. So he says, did you learn? He says, no. And came, but not Parnasecha. By what virtue should I feed you? Amalei Parnasini kechelav ukaori. Feed me like a dog or like a raven. So he was compelled by that, and he, Rebbe, fed him.
Yeah, by the way, this just raises further questions. Once you take the hardline policy, you know, so Rebbe took a hardline policy, no, I'm a aretz, but then the guy comes in and says, Parnasani kikal v'chorev, he gives in. Right?
Right.
Also, you might say, somebody who has such a good argument that Parnasani kikal v'chorev is clearly not an amaretz. But that's not consistent with the next line in the Gemara. Right, because what happens? Basar dinafik.
Right, basar dinafik. Yasev Rebbe the kametzdaer. So Rebbe regretted and was pained by his decision. Amar oilish and asnati piti lamaretz. Woe to me that I gave food to an amaretz. Okay. So Amar lafana reishum b'Rebbe Shema Yonasan ben Amram talmidchahu. Maybe the person you fed was Yonasan ben Amram, who was actually one of your talmidim. She'ena rotza lehanos mekavator meyema. And he never wanted to, earn benefit from the Kavod Torah in his lifetime. So Balkuva Eshkach, they checked, and he said it was indeed the case. This was my Talmud. Apparently, he doesn't know who his Talmidim are. And Amar Rebbe Kansur Kol. And then, as a final move, he says, "Okay, let everyone enter."
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing, right? About not really knowing the Talmidim.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Serious? somebody else, speaking to somebody yesterday who's learning in a kol, like a more Haredi, more yeshivish kol out of town, and he was learning in YU beforehand. And I said, how does it compare to YU? And he said, you know, it's a little to the right of YU. But on the other hand, like the moment, the day I walked in there, everybody said hi to me and greeted me. And so it's like so much more friendly. So I was like, and I'll trade that in any day. So, yeah, I don't know.
So anyway, so he said, Yikansi Akol, which Pashas was because maybe there are other people who are Talmidei the Chachamim and therefore deserve to live, apparently.
Meaning he wants to feed Talmidei Chachamim, but maybe there are other quiet Talmidei Chachamim out there who don't want to take honor for themselves. So Rebbe said anybody could come in. Yeah. Okay. Now the question is, why is the Gemara telling us this story? Or what does this have to do with the analysis, Rabbanan Lo by Netirusa? Correct? Yeah. So I think most Rishonim think this line is why the story is here. Okay. Right. Rebbe the time, eh?
Right, so Pashas says the next line, Rebbe the time, Dama Rebbe, ain't paranos bala olam ela bishvil amayaretz. Calamities only come to the world because of the amayaretz.
Okay, so the thought of this story is Rebbe did not want to support the amayaretz because he thought they're the cause. They're like the smokers who are giving everybody else secondhand smoke problems, right? So they're the cause of paranos, and Rebbe didn't want to support them. He didn't want to be like dispensing cigarettes to smokers. Now, the Meiri here says, commenting on this, Daf Chesamid Aleph, let's say, Zachariah, just take us through the Meiri quickly, these two lines. Zeshahaya.
Zeshahaya Rabbeinu Kodosh Matir La'antim Olios Achzari La'maret. So why did Rabbeinu turn himself to be cruel to Ame'aret? Because he had a justification. And even these certain kinds of taxes are coming because of Amayaretz.
Ah, so the Meiri here is trying to explain the connection between the sugyas, right? And this gets back to what I was reading into the second, the Adinavi justification within the Gemara. It's but for the Amayaretz, we would be redeemed and not have to pay all these taxes to our patrons and rulers in exile. And the Meiri is saying that's why the Gemara brings the story of Rebbe. Ein paranios bala olam el bishvil amayaretz means that they're the cause of these taxes. But for their conduct and their behavior, we wouldn't have to incur all of these bad costs, right? So like today, depending where you live, you could say they're like the carbon emitters, right? Destroying the planet, and now we have to spend so much money going green or worrying about these things because of these people who caused the harms. Yeah, is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So I think that is very much like the Mordechai or the Yad Rama justification for taxes, right? Is it the costs or the harms that they're bringing about? And then the next line, the next story in the Gemara really reinforces this. Kahu Demei Kalila.
Right, so there's a how to make klila. So there's a some sort of tax to pay for a crown, the shadua Tveria, which was the tax was imposed on the town of Tveria. Also, kamei de Rebbe v'amrulei. So some people from the town, presumably amayaretz, came before Rebbe and they said to him, "Leis rabbanan b'hadan, let the rabbis give with us."
Let the rabbanan bear part of the burden with the rest of the town. So maybe most Rishonim understand this case. This was a crown that was given to the anshei Tveria to watch. And then it was stolen on their watch or something. And then they had to pay up damages to the king. And the question was, which members of the town will have to bear the burden? And so the question was, do the Chacham have to chip in? So what did that turn on?
So, this question of Ein Paranos Bala Olam Bishvil Amayaretz.
Exactly. You could see, for example, the... The Mordechai gives an explanation of the case. But so what happened in the case? They said the Rabbanan should participate. The Rabbanan were not going to participate.
Right. So Amrulei Arukinan, they threatened, we'll just leave. So Amrulei Aruku, so he called their bluff, said leave.
Right, I mean, the Amayaretz threatened to leave, so they won't have to bear the cost.
Yeah. So Arku Pal Gehon, so half of them left. Del Yuha Palga. So then the king lowered the tax burden by half. So Asu Hanhu Palga Kamid Rabbi. So this half came before Amalei, Lisa Rabbana Bahadan, Amarluhu, Lo. So let the Rabbanan give with us now. He says, not Arukinan, the Aruku. So they ran away. So Arku Kuhu, so all of them ran away, Pash, Hahu Kobes, except for some launderer. Shadu Akobes. So they put the entire tax on the launderer. Arakovics, he ran away. Paka Klila, then the entire tax burden was removed. So Amarebi Ra'isim, you have seen. She'in pornos balola melishvila me'aret.
Yeah. So that's a great example. And what is that supposed to show? Or at least that instance is supposed to show that what? That
source of taxes, or at least some sort of taxes, are because of the me'aret.
Yeah. Does everybody see what the Gemara is getting at here? The Gemara is trying to say, look, you know, once the Amarets are gone, the tax burden was removed. So this is supposed to illustrate the claim that's made earlier in Pronios Baliola Mel Bishvil Amarets. Now, I think it's clear, and the Meiri is very clear in this in Daf Ches, that what the Gemara is getting at is exactly this idea, that if this is a cost-based type of, or a Nezek-based type of collection, and that's why the Talmid Chachamim don't have to participate in it. Now, it's actually an interesting question to me, like, why is the world divided into Talmid Chachamim versus Amaratzim? Like, isn't there maybe some middle class in between? And then you might have some Nafkamina there. That's something to just think about in terms of how the Gemara divides up the population. But I think this ending of the Gemara is very clear that there's this separate rationale for imposing the taxes on exclusively on the Amiarets. Okay, everybody with me so far? Everybody clear on the three different theories that make their way into the Gemara? Okay, I want to quickly mention a fourth. It's raised by the Chazon Ish, doesn't appear explicitly in the Gemara. So I'm just going to take you down here for a second to this Chazon Ish and commenting on our Gemara in Simin Hei Osir Chas. And it's a remarkable example of where, you know, a 20th century Acharon inserts a new rationale that's not really present in the Gemara at all. So I just want to emphasize that aspect of his analysis. So here's what he says. Don't the Rabbanan also have to abide by the rules of nature and not rely on miracles to protect them? And he cites a few Gemaras that motivate the notion of not relying on miracles. Al yamud adam makom sakana. He gives a few examples. And then he says this. V'efshar divi'ir d'chul hu Rabbanan kofen ze'azel livnos choma. Oh, maybe if it's a town just of Talmidei Chachamim, then they have a right to force each other to build a wall, which is peculiar if it's Rabbanan lo b'nei tzibur in general. Aval be'ir shedarim ba b'nei adam v'yesh b'nei and Rabbanan matila nesachoma al hamonam upochon esachachamim. The Gemara's case is only for a town where it's some Talmidei Chachamim and some Ami Aretz. There you would impose it exclusively on the Ami Aretz. Why? Kemosh shepochon min hamas shehatora paterasan Kivan she'ena mishtadlin al hasagas hamamon bishvil eskam b'tora. Therefore, ein litol mehem memonam bishvil mas. So what's he saying here in this line? Upotrin es hachachamim kemo she'pturin min hamas she'hatora patrasan. Kivan she'ena mishtadlen al asagas hamamon b'shvil oskam b'tora ein litol mehem mamona b'shvil hamas.
As in, since they're not working because they're learning, therefore they don't have to pay. As in, the fact that they're not making a lot of money is a justification for them not paying the tax.
Yeah, he's saying it's they're not mishtadlen al asagas, they're not in businesses or in careers that are pursuing income. And for some reason, it only really makes sense to impose a tax on a for-profit type of enterprise. right? If someone's in the business of making money, so we'll tax their money. But if someone's not really in a pursuit of money, he thinks that's not, we shouldn't be taxing them. This is like a for-profit versus a non-for-profit type argument. And this, I think, is very close to the Pasuk in Ezra. If the theory seems to be, according to the Chazon Ish, if you're pursuing income, it's reasonable to justify, it's justifiable to tax that, but not if someone's primary engagement is to provide public goods or other public services. Do you guys agree with that reading of the Chazon Ish? Let me just say one more thing, and then he says, "V'hachanami matzu chachamim she'ein lito mehem l'netirusa." The acharisha be'emes torasan maganas aleihem, the einan nisunin tachas mikre ateva kishar bnei adam because of ashkacha v'ashem, etc., etc. Hilchach roi talmid chacham lepocha minatirusa ulahatil tzachom al shar bnei ha'ir. But I think what's so striking here is that he sees that as a secondary justification, right? This idea of einan bay netirusa because of hashkacha. That's not the primary justification, right? Because he thinks it's that would run afoul of Ein Som Chenal Anes. And so coming back to Romy's earlier point, right? This is, I think the Chazon Ish is uncomfortable with the halachic obligation being directly determined by the metaphysical commitments of what Hashkacha does for Talmid Chachamim and their ability to rely on Anes. So he says, oh, you know what? That's not the real thing that explains the Gemara's Pesach. The real thing that explains the Gemara's Pesach is that they're not involved in professions that generate Hasagas Mammon. That's why they're Patur Min HaMasim. Okay, and to add on to that, the Gemara said, oh, by the way, Lo Bayin Netirusa. But the Lo Bayin Netirusa is not what drives the halachic conclusion of the tax exemption. Do you guys see that? Yeah, Tzchar, you agree with my reading?
Yeah, I definitely think that's what he's saying here. It doesn't really explain what's going on with the Ir Shekula Rabbanon. Like, those things don't really follow.
Well, I think he's trying to say they still need... I think he's saying, look, they still need protection, and they're not allowed to rely on an ace. So in an Ir Shekula Rabbanon, they, of course, require protection, and they could tax each other. But if this is like as between Amaratzim, the Amei Aretz paying for it, or the Talmid Chacham paying for it, we give the exemption to the Talmid Chacham because they're not engaged in Asagas Mamon. So it's like when you have a society where people are in pursuit of financial gain and people who are providing public goods, the money should be raised from the people who live in pursuit of the financial gains.
Right. I think this is distinct from the Pasuk in Ezra, though, because over there it's very clear, like you said, it's a public good, like they're working Melech HaShemayim, they're, you know, spending their time doing something here. Here it's again, unless you're going metaphysical, it's not clear it's a public good, it's more just like their private learning.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the nafkamina, this is like in political philosophy, the question is like, what about the dudes in California who just want to surf all day, right? They're not providing any value to society, but they're not pursuing Hasagas Mammon either, right? So for the Chazon Ish, it's an interesting question, right? What does he say? He says, "Shein amishtadlin al asagas hamamam," but then he does say "bishvil
haskamatoras," and it's a justified non.
Right. See, the Chazon Ish was worried about the surfers, and he wanted to make sure that the surfers in California weren't included in his exemption. Right. So it's like you forego hasagas mamon for some public, or you're saying some valuable other pursuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is why I flagged earlier, and then I'm going to take Josh's hand, in the Gemara about Behem tu kula raglecha. So the Gemara said, Af chovev amim kol kadosh abiyadecha, Behem tu kula raglecha, Eilu tamid chacham shem mekatitin ragleyem me'ir li'ir m'mdina l'mdina l'ul motora. Lisa v'litim b'dibrusav shel makom. It wasn't clear to me if that meant like part of the traveling to go teach and... You know, it paints a picture of people who are providing communal services. Right? You're moving around from town to town to teach and engage with other people. So that provision of services, even though it's not so explicit in the Gemara. Because Lulmo, not Lulame Torah, which is, I guess, Zechariah, one of your points. Right? So what is it? Is it the provision of public goods? The fact that they're also B'malach HaShemayim? To my mind, it's a little hard to nail down that question. But for me, the most important part of the Chazanish is that it's the foregoing Hasagas Mamon aspect of it for Talmud Torah that explains the tax exemption. And he moves away from the Gemara's explicit rationale of Chachamim Lo Tzricha Netirusa. And he says, that's just a, you know, like a nice, that's like a nice secondary type of consideration, but not what drives the actual patur. Josh, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I think the discussion about the surface in California might have answered it. But I was thinking, like, let's say you're an entrepreneur who's like pursuing money, but you've made like negative $1,000 because your business is failing. Like, we're saying it's about making money or the pursuit of making money, like, you know.
So look at the bolded word.
Right, but it seems to make a little, like, not so much sense to me. Like, why do we care that this entrepreneur is pursuing money if he's not making it? Then I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, should we tax people based off how much they tried to make or how much they actually earned, right? But I think he's trying to say, you know, it's like a for-profit versus a non-for-profit type of distinction, right? So are you somebody, remember that at Noda Behuda, like we pay rent to live here and lefi nefashos, and we pay lefi mamon because of access to the economy, right, where we make money. And I think he's just saying, look, somebody who is trying to make money in the market and the economy, and that's the type of person who should be chipping in for...
But you're like buying into the system, kind of. Yeah.
I think maybe that's what he's saying. If I had to, you know, go one way or the other in the Chazanish. But yeah, I think it's a really good point, Josh. Tzachary, you wanted to respond to that?
Not respond to that. But I mean, it's maybe a bit of a tangent. So there's two stories with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, right? There's the Otzeros, right? The storehouse story. And then there's the crown tax story. You really just need the crown tax story. So Noah pointed out that actually, like, in the first story, it's a bit kind of a Maisa Listor, where you have like the most virtuous way to be is to not try to seek special dispensations and benefits because of your Talmud Torah, of the fact that he didn't want to get Hana from his Kavod HaTorah. And that's just kind of brushed under the rug, but it's still kind of there in the Gemara. I don't know if anyone have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. I think we need to think more about the relationship between those two stories. That was your comment on the discussion on the WhatsApp, right?
Well, now there's the second, right? So that's just what's going on with the Otsro story. And now you have this other problem of, okay, well, in the crown tax story, you have Rabbi Yehuda Nasi having very different attitudes, right? So I don't know why the Shutz of Chilukim is in. So for the crown tax is not on Chachamim, but the wall tax is on Chachamim.
Yeah, right. We need to think about it. I want to mention one other source here, and we'll stop here with this today. This Radvaz in Chelek Beis Siman Tafshin Nun Beis, Tshuva the Radvaz. And he was asked the following. Odiach daiti al machlokes asher nafal b'Yerushalayim bein ha-bal ha-batim bein ha-chachamim al inyan priyash shomrei ha-shchuna. So, you know, the Radvaz is like a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch. So you have this debate between the dwellers of Yerushalayim. The chachamim didn't want to pay for the guards, but the bal ha-batim wanted the chachamim to chip in. Okay? So we get this one, this discussion. The Gemara says, Tshuva, kvar yedata darminim ba-basra there's no real debate about this. And then he says, "Aval benidon didon, afilu haomrim she'ein hachachamim chayavin lefroa kasef golgota, modim heim dechayavin hachachamim lefroa b'shmiros." Our case is different. And in this case, everybody's going to agree that the Chacham have to chip in. What's special about this case? So it's fantastic. The Bishlam Mahecha Sha Melech Osar Ha'ir Mitzave Lohaniach Shomrim B'chol Shchuna V'Shchuna Oshe Yatzu Heim Ba'atzmam Lishmar Kol Echad Ve'Echad Leilo B'chei Gavna Chachamim Pturim D'lo Bo'ay Netirusa U'Porin Ha'Balei Batim Aleihem. So the thought is, if the tax is imposed from the outside, then the Chacham are Pater, because they could say we don't need it. Okay. Blah blah blah. Aval benidon didan. Habalabatim omrim enan achnu tzrichin shomrim ki ani eman achnu. Hachachamim tzohakim lomar tamidu shomrim. So he says what the facts of his case were such that the balabatim were cheap. They're like, we're poor. We have no money to protect. Right? The Chachamim were the ones who were pushing them to pay for the Shomrim. So he says, V'heim ba'atzman modim debo nitzirusa. He says, the fact that Chachamim are so interested in getting Shomrim shows that they need Shmira. Right? It's like they're made against themselves that they're ba'yin nitzirusa. Hayesh min adin o min okay nasvara. So it's a very fascinating tshuva, the Radvaz, where he says, sure, in principle, if the tax is imposed from the outside, the Rabbanan can get away with an argument, we don't need Shmira. But if the Rabbanan themselves are going around saying that they need the Shomrim, then they're obligating themselves to contribute. So this puts some pressure on how we think about the notion of lobai netirusa, right? Maybe it just means that it's a legal power that they have to claim this, but it's not an absolute fact that, you know, objectively speaking, the Chachamim are never the beneficiaries of Shmira. So the interesting thing, the Chazon Ish was uncomfortable with ein sum chenal anes, right? That's what motivated the Chazon Ish's analysis. And the Radvaz and the Chazon Ish moved away from Lobay and Tirusa entirely. So that's just a secondary justification. The Radvaz's analysis seems to take Lotzrichin and Tirusa as a legal claim that they could assert with merit, but not a categorical fact. Right? And the Nafkamina is in a case where they seem to concede that they need Shmira, then they would be chayev to chip in. Does everybody see that? Okay, so we're going to stop here. So we'll pick up with this discussion. We're going to get deeper into Lobay Netirusa in the beginning of next semester, right? We shouldn't have shear during the break. We all in agreement on that? If there's a big movement to have shear during the break, somebody could raise it on the WhatsApp and we could, if you want to have once or twice, but if everybody wants to take up other projects in the break, that's fine too. And I want us to think more about what this means, Lobay Netirusa, the relationship between the metaphysical claim of Hashgacha that Chazon Ish raises and the halachic claim. And then again, to think about how the different psukim and theories advance in the Gemara of Ein Pronius Bala Olam El Bishvil Ami Aretz, the Ezra rationale, the citation of Lo Tzrichin et Tirusa connect to the larger question of what justifies taxes in the first place, which then determines why the Chacham should be Pater. All right. Romy, was this okay that we just got our feet wet to survey the main issues?
Yeah.
Okay. Guys, Yasher Koach for a really awesome semester. This is wonderful. I mean, I had such a rich learning experience, and I thought the discussions in Shir were just fantastic, top-notch quality. You know, you walk into the sugyas, you know, you don't know how you're going to walk out of the sugya. And I think in each of these sugyas, I really felt the contribution that you guys brought to the discussion not only refined the concepts, but certainly left me with a much deeper and comprehensive understanding of where they fit into many of the broader issues that we're discussing in Baba Basra. So guys, tremendous. Thank you. And, you know, we should keep it up next semester. And I'm very excited for what we're going to cover next month. Okay, we're going to try to cover actually a little more ground next month. Now, we got to Daf Ches in the first month, but I really want to make sure we get deep. We're going to skip a little bit, which is fine. We're going to skip a few blot at the end of the first parak. But we're going to finish this up, then we're going to do Tzedakah. That'll be our next major sugya. We're going to do Rosh Hashanah B'nei Ha'ir after that a little quickly because we covered many of the main themes so far. And then I'm thinking we're probably going to move to the second parak, the nice Harchakos and Zikin sugyas. Okay, great. Good luck on finals. And, looking forward to seeing you in the beginning of this month.